So you have the tensum, which is mandala offering. Whoever requests for the tea, usually in Buddhism what happens, we don't teach unless requested. So when requested, we usually teach publicly because it will be very difficult for a teacher to teach one person privately non-stop, you know, non-stop. So you get everybody together. So the person who actually asked and requested for the teachings of a particular whatever, they come up to the teacher and they offer a mandala. They offer the body of the Buddha, the speech of the Buddha, and the mind of the Buddha to represent by, I request you to give the teachings of the Buddha in order that I may achieve Buddha's body, speech, and mind. So it's a symbolic offering of the sponsors who have requested the teachings. Alright? Usually it's like that. In Buddhism, we don't convert, we don't send missionaries, we don't force, and we don't make people do it. If people request it, we do it, otherwise we don't. There's no such thing as that in Buddhism at all. Alright? So in the beginning, that little ceremony was that. You must be wondering what's going on, you know, everybody doing this and doing that, doing this and doing that. Don't know what's going on. Okay, so I want to get my value for mantra. Okay, before I start, I would like everybody to stand up for 1 minute, stretch your legs, and sit down. Right? Stand up and stretch your legs. Yeah, that was fast. Yeah, open the door.
Hello, hello, Robert. Come.
Come in. I saw your wife leave with some strange man just now, very tall and good looking. It wasn't me though. I mean, she disappeared. She said, tell Robert, it's over. No, I'm just kidding. She's somewhere around. Oh, you can take mommy and daddy home. Huh? Okay, very nice. Thank you. See you again. Bye-bye. A little mantra roller. Bye-bye. She comes to Kichara almost every day to roll mantras this one. How nice, huh? Not like some lazy people I know. Thank you. Bye-bye. Better. Bye, Robert.
Bye.
Give this to us. You drink this because you're not used to all this. Here, give this to Kim. Xiaojian doesn't get one. She's used to it already. The lady next to Xiaojian is Kim. I know. It's okay. Xia has been reciting Manjushri backwards again today. Okay. Now, to get value for your mantra's work, all right? Value for mantra's work. Put that on low. It's very loud. And circulate, and everybody can get it. I know everybody's saying, how come Rinji get the fan? We don't get it. Make it circulate. Never mind the camera blow, I already made dolphins. This way. Don't cover no harm. No, no, just turn the top. Acha, can you do it? He's from India. Not North India, my monastery India. They're a little bit over there, don't know which one. Yeah, we turned the top one, that's all. That's okay. Very good. Long in the sun already. Make it turn. You need a round of clock on fan. Operation. Yeah. Better. Buddha don't need no fan. Your Buddha need a fan because your Buddha a funny one. I don't want everybody to be sweating to death. That's a little bit better, huh? Chad gets all of it, everybody else don't get. Okay. Wires and robes and fans and oh. Next slide, I'm telling you. It's gonna be different. I took a wrong turn in this slide. When I was taking incarnation, I took a wrong turn. There was two choices. There was one Tibetan Rinpoche, Tam Rinpoche, there was another one to be born in Japan, very rich. And I don't know. Somehow I got distracted, you know, maybe some lights in the sky, the sun was rising, I was looking and I took a wrong turn, I woke up and here I am. Next slide, I'll be ready. Next slide, I'll be real ready. I took a wrong turn, I think most of us took a wrong turn. Some people turn, they never turn back again. Okay, so before we do any Dharma practices, the minute we wake up in the morning, These are very simple mantras to recite. The minute we wake up in the morning, and I don't want you all to freak out. These are Sanskrit mantras. Don't think, oh God, if I don't chant them right, I don't get the blessing. If you chant them wrong, sincerely, you still get the blessing. So don't freak out about the pronunciation. I know people think, but I can't pronounce it right, do I still get the blessing? No, no, you still get the blessing. Don't worry, okay? Don't worry. The Buddha is not so stupid. The minute you say the mantra, the Buddha look at you and say, poor thing, but never mind, bless him. Okay. Bless me. If he bless the tree, he's going to bless you. Look at me, poor thing. Okay. The first mantra is this. I'll say it to you, and then you guys just listen carefully, then you know, all right? Om Sambara, Sambara, Vimara Sara Mahajava Hum. Om Mara Mara, Vimara Sara Mahajava Hum. Om Sambara Sambara Vimana Sara Mahajava Hum. Om Mara Mara Vimana Sara Mahajava Hum. Om Sambara Sambara Vimana Sara Mahajava Hum. Om Mara Mara Vimana Sara Mahajava Hum. Alright? Yes, the minute you wake up in the morning, or even a little bit later, it's okay. You recite it 7 times and you think, whatever I do today, whatever actions I do today that's virtuous and good, may be multiplied so the merits propel me to become a Buddha to benefit others. So the minute you wake up, you think like that. You think about your Buddha. Maybe like Amitabha. Maybe like Tara. Maybe like Tsongkhapa. Maybe like Jesus Christ. It doesn't matter. Whatever you like. Whatever Buddha or holy thing you like, you think about. Alright? Anything. So the minute you think, may my virtues be multiplied by 100,000 times. Om Sambara Sambara Vimana Sambara Java Mana Mana Vimana Sambara Java Sambara Sambara Vimana Sambara Java Mana Mana Sambara Java Sambara Java Mana Mana. That's it, 7 times. So if you're in a place like, if you're with your husband or wife, and then, you know, you don't wake up and become your, you're so holy, you're so good, you just wake up and you go, Om Sambara Sambara Vimana Sambara Java Mana Mana. You don't wake up your neighbor. You don't wake up people. You don't freak them out. Okay? If you're in a place that they don't accept this or whatever, it's not you're wrong or you're hiding or you are not proud. It is to be skillful and respectful of other people's thoughts. So if you're in a place or an environment or with people who think you're weird because you get up in the morning and start chanting, then don't show them you're chanting. It's not that you're wrong. It's the Buddhist attitude of being even one step higher to be more kind to them. And when we actually chant mantras, unless we are alone or in a prescribed ritual place, we're not supposed to chant loud. We're not supposed to chant in a way that the person next to us can hear. Why? It shows something like we're showing off. We're supposed to chant it quietly and pronounce and not show. And when we do mantras, we should do mantras and prayers in a way as when we are with people, like, as if we are not doing it, as if we don't know it well. Never chant and never do it in such a way that's disruptive to other people in any way, shape, or form. Not because what you're doing is wrong, but the very reason you're doing the mantra is to develop compassion. So if you're not even compassionate to the people around you in a simple way, what else there need to be said? So mantra practices are supposed to be done very gently, very quietly, and very humbly, as if you don't know anything. Alright, so you wake up, you do that. Sometimes you forget, no problem. That day you don't get 100,000 extra. So if you give one item of food to someone that is underprivileged on the street, if you have done that mantra in the morning, then for 24 hours, during that time period, if you give a piece of food to someone, you know, it will be, the merit will be multiplied 100,000 times. So if you recite the mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Tari Tu Tari Tori Sa, Namo Kwan Su Yin Po Sa, or anything, it will be the merit of it, not the mantra, will be multiplied 100,000 times. Some people say, can I do the mantra, and then I'm supposed to do 100,000 mantras, can I just do that and do this once? No, I heard some people ask me the answer. And actually I thought, I asked my guru, I got shouted at. He said, you still have to do the mantra. It's the merit that's increased, not the mantra count. I'm like, hey. Isn't that lovely? Like, sometimes I give pujas to people. I tell them you have to do 100,000 tara. So they do Om Sambara Sambara 7 times, and they do this one round. It's 100,000. 108,000. Didn't work. I got screamed at by my guru. Because I'm always thinking shortcuts to enlightenment. That's my way. When I was in the monastery, shortcut. My guru said that, why do you always want a shortcut to enlightenment? I said, because I'm very distracted. He said, why are you distracted? I said, because I'm a clown. I don't know why. I just want a shortcut. I want to be a Buddha fast. Yeah. Anyways, number 2. The rosary is a very important object to use. Your rosary. They should be of lotus seeds, crystals, sandalwood, or bodhicitta wood, or they can be a precious item such as amber or lapis lazuli. These 5-6 objects that I mentioned are very, very good for meditation and very good for developing compassion. If you can't get that, and you can just get a normal one, it's still okay. Don't think, oh my God, I don't have lotus seed, or I do this, I want to become compassionate. No, I mean, there are certain things that you can do. If you cannot do it, it's okay. Don't be, if you don't have an amber mala, Buddha don't bless you. Or you have lotus seed, it's 20 ringgit, amber is 100 ringgit, Buddha give the 100 ringgit mala more blessing. So you do, no, Buddha's not like that. Buddha's not like a Chinese businessman. He got amber mala, I give him more blessing. He got a lotus one, I give less blessing. No, Buddha's not a Chinese businessman. Buddha's a Tibetan businessman. Tibet no money one. Okay. So it doesn't, so 108, and usually it's nice not to let people touch your malas. I mean, if they grab and touch it, they say, you can't. My guru said you can't touch my mala. I mean, it's not like they're touching your bubbly or something, you know? It's just the mala. I mean, if asking they touch it, okay, lah. But some people, if our energy is weak, and some people have some funny energy, it can affect us. It can definitely affect us, because not all of us, it's not that they intentionally want to hurt us, but sometimes just got them. So to bless your mantra daily, I'll bless your rosary daily and keep it as a very holy object to recite mantras. And also, if you bless it, if you bless it, right, it will be increased. I don't understand this increasing. I think it's another 100,000 or whatever. The merits, because that's number system. I don't understand. FG understands it, but I don't. You can ask FG Rimji afterwards. Anyway, if you recite it and you blow it on, it's increased at least minimum 100,000 efficacy. So what you do is you hold your mala. And you blow on it, you're consecrated. So negative energy cannot touch your mala, negative energy cannot touch your rosary. And every day you do that, your rosary becomes more and more powerful. And later, when you become an accomplished person, very compassionate, your rosary can be something that is an object of blessing. So people can touch it on their head and bless them. If they have spirit possession, you touch them with it, the spirit will run. Alright? If you don't have that power, don't show off, because if it's a spirit, the spirit will get it. Be very careful, because some of these spirits we don't know. I'm serious. You know, when I do exorcisms, I do divination. Who's more powerful, him or me? It always is them, but never mind, I got the Buddha behind me. Because I tell the spirit, if you don't beat it, I'm going to send black Tara. And black Tara looks like this. So whenever they see black Tara, it's like, I love it. It's not me. People always think, oh, they say, oh, Samanji is so powerful. When we recite mantra one, you know, the spirit go like that go, or this go, or that go, or the control. Like that. It's not Samanji. I'm going to let you in the secret. It's them. They're always hanging around. You know, they're not hanging around me because I'm special. They're hanging around because I asked them to hang around. I said, don't hang around. I'm going back to India. So they hang around and help me. They hang around. It's a blackmail. Buddha and protector don't help me. I go back to India. You teach Dharma yourself. So he says, okay, because they don't want to teach, they want to hang out in heaven or something, I don't know. No, I'm just kidding, just kidding, just kidding. Okay, the next one is, when you put offerings out, the offerings can be taken... The offerings can be taken away by spirits, or sometimes not clean or impure. To purify the offerings, you can do this mantra to bless the offerings and increase it. And the mantra goes like this. Namo Ratna Chayaya, Namo Bhagavate, Venza Sawa Parma Dine, Tata Kataya, Arha Sama Sambuddhaya, Teyata Venza Venza Maha Venza Maha Teja Venza Maha Vidya Venza, Maha Bodhichitta Venza, Maha Bodhi Mando Pasam, Kramana Venza, Sawakama Varana Visutane Venza Soha. So, like example, we offer light to Kuan Yin on your altar at home, to Kuan Yin or to Buddha, or you offer incense, or you offer some food, you offer some bao bread, you know, whatever. Or you go to Temurimji and you offer a very beautiful, fabulous, big, fat, delicious ang bao, whatever you want. Oh, another one. Hey, good side, I say ang bao kong showed up. Hello. Hello, Mr. Kong, how are you? How are you? Nice to meet you. Yapo Chu, nice to see you. Hello. Hello. Thanks. Have a seat. Relax, have a seat. See, this guy's smart. He puts his handphone on immediately. Very good. Okay, have a seat. You come here because you're young, huh? You let this uncle sit on the chair. Now you can lock the door. I think no more people. You move chair back, sit. Yeah, come sit, sit. You're a big guy. I wouldn't want to meet you in the dark alley. No, you sit. Be comfortable, Dom. I'm not traditional. I want you to get the Dharma. Forget all this physical respecting. You know? I'm not into all that. You get the Dharma, you chant, and I'm happy. All right, now where was we before Ang Pao walked in? Ah, Mr. Pao walked in. I was talking about Ang Pao, and did you not?
Good sign, huh?
When Adeline walked in, I didn't say Ang Pao, come. Okay, so when you offer something on the altar, when you offer something to the Buddha, when you put something, you just don't leave it on the altar. You can bless it and make it bigger and increase the merit by reciting his mantra. So actually this prayer, you can just put in a little cover and leave near your altar, under a table or whatever. After a while you'll memorize, it's quite easy. So this is the purify the mantra. Any questions about this first page so far? Anybody have any, Gyeongbing, any questions? You sure? Gyeongbing's good, she did 1 million mantra on Tara. You did, didn't you, 1 million? Or take 10 away, 100,000. No, 1 million.
Yeah, she did, she did.
Gyeongbing called me up one day and said, I need a job, how? I said, you've got a mantra now. She said, how many? I said, 1 million. She said, 1 million! 1 000 000 000. I said, yeah. And she went, and then I said, if you do that, you get a job. So she did the mantra and got a job.
Yeah.
All types of funny people in here, I tell you. Everybody got a story, almost. But everybody's wonderful. Okay, any questions on the first page? Any questions? Easy, huh? Easy. Xia Chen got a question, but she didn't. No, Rod Stewart got a question, she did not ask you, don't want to look like stupid. She's like, you better not ask, I look stupid. Like, never mind, just ask. Noah, you know, huh? Let's have Xia Chen recite the mantra. Rod Stewart, you're as red as your hair. There's another funny one. She had a trip to Korea in England. So I didn't want her to go because we had some work here. So I tricked her. I said, you know, the trip won't be successful. She went, is it? She said, should I cancel it? And she was twitching, you know. And I said, you know, you can do some mantras. I tricked her to do some mantra stuff. See, you got to trick these people to do Dharma practice. You tell them straight up, do it, you're going to be a Buddha. They say, get lost. You tell them you're going to have an accident, do it. They go, okay, I do it. So some people, you blackmail them, make them do the mantra. They do it. When they become higher level, they know what the purpose is. So with Rod Stewart, I blackmailed her now. So I got her to do a few little pujas and some little extra mantras. So she's sitting on the plane. And a few months ago, she was looking at something saying, do mantra. Oh. And like, yes, she's doing it now. Never mind. She's a good victim, look at that. She's a wonderful person. You can tease her to death, she don't care one. This is friends I like.
We are victims.
Yeah, okay. I mean friends. Now, as a Buddhist, we're very worried about a lot of things that we step on. A lot of ants and animals we step on, and there is some bad karma associated with it. It's not very heavy because we didn't do it on purpose. So to avoid that, Buddha taught a mantra for us to recite. And these things I'm teaching you is just extras. You don't have to do it, all right? And this has nothing to do with SARS. I'm just giving you this as a normal practice. General practice. It's not yellow hat, red hat, this, second. It's Buddhist practice. General, okay? So the next mantra is like this. You recite it 3 times, and you spit on the soles of your feet very lightly and gently, all right? And if you're very prosperous and you can't reach your feet, then you can, you know, maybe long distance up. You do your own way, like, you know. So, you do the mantra, Om Kekara Gana Hum Kri Soha. Om Kekara Gana Hum Kri Soha. Om Kekara Gana Hum Kri Soha. 3 times, and then you spit on your feet very lightly, like this. Very lightly, just 1 small dot. No. Don't have to go crazy long. Alright, you don't, just a little bit. And then you put on your socks and shoes and you go to work or whatever. And that day, whatever animals you step on accidentally, you actually, when they die under your feet, they take rebirth in the God realms due to this mantra. But then don't run around.
I send you to Buddha realm.
Only by action. Because I know there are people up there frustrated and they have nothing to do and they just want to take it out on the insects. So, well, I send them to Buddha heaven. Cannot, okay? Yeah. So, this is by accident, like you said, oh God. Because, like in my house in Banda Utama, you know, nearby, near the outside area, there are a lot of ants in the other day. I stepped on about 20, 30 of them by accident. And I'm going to marry you. And I forgot to do my mitra. Oh God. Yeah, like that, okay? Then, before you actually do the meditation, oh, any questions on the blessing of the feet mantra? Anything?
Can you do it for a young child?
Oh, of course. You can do it for a young child, but as they get older, teach them. Of course you can. That's a good question. I never thought about it. Yeah, I can. Why not? Well, how many feet do you have? That's a good one. Okay. If you blow on the left and you forget the right, what happens if you stand on the right, not the left? So blow on both and remember all things. This one, I like her. She's good. You blow like both feet. You're wonderful. This lady is wonderful. Whenever we have a Dharma talk, she drives all the way from JB, 5-6 hours, come attend Dharma talk, and Dharma talk finish, she drive all the way back. Can you imagine that for Dharma talk? I'm very honored. I'm not such a good teacher that I deserve this kind of people, but anyways, you know, 10 hours to listen to me. I wouldn't drive 10 hours to listen to me. Okay. Now, before we do any meditations or we do any type of sadhana or prayers, then if we have an altar, what we usually do is this, the meditation site preparation. The first step is we should sweep and clean the room. Sweep up and clean the room, you know, dust it lightly or whatever, like straighten it out and arrange the altar. Number two, make offerings on the altar of light, food, incense, water bowls, water, etc., whatever you usually put. So first you clean up the place lightly, and don't think I clean for me. Think I'm cleaning for the Buddha. Buddha is here. Clean up the area, clean up the room, and then number two, second step, you arrange the altar. You make the offerings you want to make on the altar. Number three, you make a good motivation, you sit in a comfortable position, and you do the refuge, and you take, develop bodhicitta mind. Those two steps will be in any practice included. I'll teach you that later. So those two is taking refuge and developing a good mind, developing bodhicitta. Number four, you visualize the guru, the buddhas, the bodhisattvas, or whatever, or you visualize your yidam. In this case, it will be tara. Okay? So you clean the place, you make offerings, and you sit comfortably and think, I'm going to take refuge in the Buddha. And I trust the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, and I will do this meditation so that I can clean my mind and my karma so I can be beneficial to other people. Think like that. The next step is you do the visualization. Whether it's your Guru or Buddha or Lama Tsongkhapa, whatever, you do the visualization. The next one is you offer the 7-minute prayer and mandala by reciting those prayers. That will be in the sadhana later. Number six, we make requests to the lineage Guru's inspiration. That will be in the sadhana also. Alright, that's general preparations. The next stage, we went over the significance of Tara. So I want to page 3, the 8 fears. I want to go over the notes. Yeah.
Can you decode the meat part?
Sorry?
Meat.
Oh yeah, sorry. I skipped it on. Okay. Okay, back to page 2. Okay. People always ask, the minute you're Buddhist, the first question they ask you in a Chinese area is, are you vegetarian? 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 No, I'm not, and I kill it myself. I've been asked that about 5 billion times. If I got 10 cents for each time I've been asked if I'm vegetarian, I would be rich. Me and Xia Qian would both own a BMW. And mine will be a current one. So, what happens is this. Buddha is extremely compassionate. Buddha is a fully enlightened being. Anything associated with the Buddha and Buddha's body, male or female, doesn't matter. It will bring benefit to the being. So during Buddha's time, there are many, many types of people who want to make offerings to the Buddha. So Buddha himself at that time, Buddha Shakyamuni, the historical Buddha, has no possessions, doesn't have a house, doesn't have any place permanent because he's a wandering, ascetic monk. So the only thing they can offer Buddha is maybe once a year offering fresh robes, during the rainy season offering protection and cover and shelter, and daily food. So when they offer the food, they want to offer the best to Buddha. So Buddha made no restrictions on that. But he did say, if you offer me meat, please do not kill it for the person, for me specifically. And you yourself cannot order the meat to be killed, and you cannot instigate it to be killed by other people like, oh, I can't kill, I'm a Buddhist, and you know, I can't do it, but can I give you $10 to do it? But don't tell people I did it. Cannot. So you cannot order it to be killed, you cannot instruct it to be killed, and you cannot have it killed, and it cannot be killed for you. On those bases, you are allowed to have meat. Of course, it's better if you don't. Of course it's better. There's no debate, and I'm not going to justify it. But in northern parts of Asia, when the landscape is very harsh and very cold, such as Mongolia and Tibet, you know, not all of Tibet, parts of Tibet, where there are very little things that grow, and people live off the livestock, there was almost no choice. So Tibetans, on a general cultural and geographic basis, Tibetan practitioners do eat meat. So in order to avert the karma of that, there's a mantra for it, spoken of by the Buddha, that if you recite it 7 times and blow a bunch of meat before eating it, the animal itself will be blessed, and you will plant the seeds of that animal that has died to be reborn in a pleasant place in the future. You'll add to it. And the negative karma of eating the meat is not there. I mean, you do this conscientiously. So if you order offer or give it to that, then before you eat the meat, you recite quietly, Uma bira kekara gana hum. Okay? Isn't it Um kekara gana hum please so hard? Um kekara gana hum. Um kekara gana hum please so hard. Can you check, ma'am? You have it written down, no? Um kekara gana hum please so hard. Kekara gana hum please so hard. You got it? Yeah, there's a little mistake here, sorry. So after the home, you put hri, H-R-I, and then the next word is S-O-H-A. Sorry about that. Om kekara gana hum hri soha. Om kekara gana hum H-R-I, and next word is soha. You're right. Madam, you're right in this time. It's okay. Janet got pen? Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, he's very smart. On top of this mantra here, please so hard to add to it. Yeah. Okay, so you recite the mantra, Om Kekara Gana, Om Pi Soha, Om Kekara Gana, Om Pi Soha. Wait a minute. Uma Bira Kekara. No, wait, I'm getting all mixed up here. Wait, Umabira Tesera Soha. Yeah, it's completely off. Yeah. Okay, give me your pen. Can I borrow your pen? Maybe this one's got thicker ink, huh? Yes. Okay, it's like this, okay? Most of you already know. Om Abira Tezara Soha. Sorry about that. Om Abira Tezara Soha. A-B-I-R-A Abira Tezara T-E-Z-A-R-A Tezara Soha. Om, O-M, the next word. Okay, everybody look here and listen. Om is the first word. Next word is Abira, A, B-I-R-A. Okay, next word. T-E-Z-A-R-A. Tezara. Last word. Soha. S-O-H-A. Soha. Yeah. Okay, seven times and blow on the knee. Uma bira tezara soha, 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 uma bira tezara soha. So if you're in a restaurant with your friends and they don't do a lot of Dharma practice or whatever, you don't make a big show. You don't show off like you're such a great, wonderful, compassionate Buddhist, fantastic person. And then you sit there with your mudras, pray, and you tell everybody, wait, I've got to bless the meat before I eat it because I'm such a good Buddhist. And I'm almost becoming enlightened. Oma bira tezara soha. And then you blow on the meat. And you know what? I don't think anybody can eat it after that. You blow it on your own plate quietly without anybody knowing. The object of Buddhist practice is to make you humble with humility, not to make you a big show-off. Okay? So if you're doing Buddhist practice, you know more things and you become a bigger show-off, you're doing something wrong. Buddha not wrong, Dharma not wrong, you're doing something wrong. If you don't know how to drive a car, I give you a car, you have an accident, not my fault. Okay, you don't know, you don't have license, you drive a car, you don't blame the car, you blame yourself. You get in a puncho, you learn for 1 month like me. But I was torture learning car in a puncho. It's so small. I thought I was sardine like this 1 month. And then when I went for the test, oh my god, I paid them off. I said, just then make it, hey, and just then make sure I pass off. Because my feet so long cannot fit in. I have to stay suspended, you know. Can you imagine driving suspended for 2-3 hours? Because I cannot, if I stretch it, I go like that. No room in the poncho, and I put the seat all the way back, that's it. Can you imagine me in a poncho like fitting FG inside a poncho? No. Anyway. So, what happened? Where was I? Oh, me. Okay. So, whenever you do mantras and you're in public, you're with people, show like you are not a practitioner. Show humility and humbleness. And someone else knows something more, say yes, you know more, do more. Always oblige. Never show up. The more you do Dharma practice, the sign of Dharma practice is humility. Not showing off your knowledge, not showing off mudras, not showing off mantras, not showing off what you are, who you are. The very greatest masters, the greatest practitioners, female, male, layperson, monk, nun, whatever they are, the greatest practitioners are the ones who have real power and clairvoyance. They will always tell you they don't have it. They will always not show it unless totally necessary, and they'll always be humble. That is a sign of a spiritual practitioner. It is a sign. One who tells you they have it, run the other way. One who shows up, run the other way. Because spiritual people never show up. The more spiritual you are, the more humble you are. More humility doesn't mean you're quiet and you run around and get slapped around by people. Humility means not showing off your knowledge. And that is the pith of the steps to Dharma practice, to becoming a Buddha. That's very important. That was highlighted to me by my many gurus, and I saw them living the example. They're very attained masters. I've seen some of my masters who actually, people have fallen off from the second floor, you know, at the Dharma Center in America. They fall off from the second floor and they collapse and they hit their head and they're unconscious. And my gurus will come out and smile and say, oh, everything okay, call the ambulance, I'll call the ambulance, okay, never mind. They come and just talk to people, smile, put their hands on their face, and the guy will wake up. I'm sitting there slapping them, they still don't wake up. Yeah, and you can see their power. And sometimes, I remember once in America, I was going, oh, here we go again. In America, I was going for my driving license, you know, 100 years ago, I can't remember already. I was 18, 19, you know, but now I'm 25. But anyways, okay, now I'm 28. Anyways, when I was 17, 18, I was going for my driving license, you know, and I went twice, and I failed. So if you fail a third time, you cannot take it for a few months, like 6 months or a year. I forgot what was the stupid rule in LA, you know, Los Angeles. Anyways, I failed twice. Oh, no. So I went to my guru, I said, you know, I really need to drive, I need to get around because, you know, it's a big city. In Los Angeles, the public transport is not wonderful. It's not like New York, they have underground trams and all that stuff. It's all outside, all buses. And oh my god, you get run over by bus or beaten up in the bus. I got beaten up by the bus once, but never mind. So I said to my teacher, you know, I'm going for my test tomorrow again, how? And he just said to me, he just smiled and says, oh, you know, you'll definitely get it. And he went back to the prayers and all that. You know, God, he's just saying that to make me happy. And I did the next day. The next day I got it, and it was really easy. I could not believe it. Like that. I've seen my teachers manifest. I've seen teachers, not my teachers, but I've seen great teachers in the monastery who the local people will come and tell them, oh, you know, our crops are going to be destroyed. The rains are too heavy. Please do something. And you'll see these old masters. I've seen it with my own eyes. Go outside, take some rice, and recite prayers, throw it in the air at the rain. Within half hour, the rain completely stopped. And I'm talking about during a monsoon in India, you know, monsoon in India. I'm not talking about during the time where, you know, you look at CNN, you know that the weather's going to be better at this time. You tell people, oh, I'm going to make the rain come, you know. No. I've seen some of them sometimes when there is no rain and everything is drying up, and they come and they beg these masters, please do something. And I see them go out. They throw some rice. I don't know what they recite. I tried to bribe them. They wouldn't tell me. Anyway, they throw up in the air, and then within half hour, you see rain. Sometimes within 15 minutes, torrential rain. I'm like, oh my God. I've seen it. I don't teach you these things because they're eloquent or they're nice or I'm bored in my life. I am bored, but I'm not that bored. Okay? I've seen it and it works. These things work. And I'm a very hard person to convince. Very, very hard and very stubborn to convince. It works. I've seen these masters, you know? Anyways, have that kind of power. Mantras have that kind of power, but you have to achieve that power through recitation. Good motivation, recitation, and commitment and effort. Most important, when you attain some kind of powers, it must be used to benefit others, and you must practice it in total humility without ever showing up or earning money from it. Earning money or showing up. It's very important, and people will slowly recognize your qualities. They will recognize. People are not stupid. People are very smart. Very, very smart. All right? So, that's the meat mantra. Please, page 3, we go down to the 8 fears. And this will relate to what we're doing later. The 8 fears refer to fear of lions, fear of elephants, fear of fire, fear of snakes, fear of bandits, fear of captivity, fear of water and shipwrecks, fear of demons. Of course, this was originated 2,500 years ago in India, so these are applicable then. And you may think, well, they're not applicable now, you know? How dangerous I walk down from here to Mid-Valley and drive down and meet an elephant. why pray to Tara protect me from elephants? even you pray like that, people think you're crazy. Or from here to Mid-Valley, you know, you have a shipwreck. You know, like, you think it's not applicable. But there are deeper meanings. When you pray for fear of lions, protection from fear of lions and elephants and fire, they have a symbolic meaning. Physically, they may not be lions, but when you propitiate Tara, she protects you from these fears. What happens is, lion is the inner lion, which is pride. The inner elephant, illusion. The inner fire of hatred and anger. The inner snake of envy and jealousy. The inner bandit of wrong view and erroneous philosophies. The inner captivity of greed. Greed holds you like a prison. The inner fear of water, lust, and attachment. And the inner fear of demons. Number one, if we have a lot of pride in ourselves, pride in this case has nothing to do with the Western term, because Western people are very like, I'm good at this, I'm good at that, I'm good at this, I'm good at that, I. It's very I-centralized. It's a cultural thing. But pride is actually what it is not you're good at this or you're good at that. People will know whether you're good or not. Pride is when you are very insecure about something within yourself. And you need to reaffirm to other people that you are good at it in order to hide your insecurity about something. And therefore, you have a lot of pride to cover this insecurity. One. Two. Pride can be, you do have knowledge, but you're very stubborn to learn or to share other ways and other methods. And you think you are the best and you are the only one. So therefore, a lot of pride arises. Three. The fear that your way may be good, but there may be another way or better way or another way, and fear discovery of that and not wanting that and protection of that so pride arises, to protect yourself. Pride and spiritual practice are like putting yourself and a poisonous snake inside one room with no protection. It's very dangerous. If you have a lot of pride, there are specific Buddhist meditations to alleviate and cut it, because pride is like an upside down cup, and you're thirsty, and no matter who pours water into it, the water disperses. The cup cannot go in. Pride blocks knowledge. Pride blocks attainments. Pride blocks advancement. Pride blocks any type of knowledge, advancement, and any type of betterment, because you refuse to listen to anyone else. You refuse to do any other way. You refuse to do anything. People on a superficial level may be impressed that you're good at this and good at that, but they will see through it. So the Buddhist method of countering that is what? To be totally open about your weaknesses. To be totally open about your mind. To be totally open about whatever faults you have. That will be one way to cut pride down. Illusion is viewing reality, viewing the way things operate in a wrong way, seeing things in a wrong way, not getting information on it to have a correct view, and operating on a delusional way of thinking. Represented by elephants. Hatred and anger. There's a lot more explanation, but I won't get into it because it will take too much time away. Hatred and anger, very simple. Anger and hatred, there are two types. There is anger and hatred that actually arises that you wish to harm the other person. Your motivation is to harm and to damage the other person. Therefore, through anger and hatred, you harm them. Another type of anger and hatred that can arise is the anger and hatred that is actually out of great love and great compassion, where you actually show anger towards another being out of great love. Example, always, is a mother scolding or hitting a child out of extreme great love. A father scolding a son, great love. Looks fierce, looks wrathful, it's painful, but the motivation is love. But the anger and hatred that we wish to alleviate is the one that's motivated to harm the other. I didn't get what I want. I am belittled. A lot of pride. And therefore anger arises. And that anger is uncontrolled, and we wish to harm the other person in any way, shape, or form. If we're a good person, afterwards we regret. If we're a bad person, we carry it out. A very, very big obstacle to Dharma practice. It burdens your being, it burdens your practice, and anything you do, you will not have peace. Represented by fire. Envy and jealousy. Envy and jealousy is never satisfied with what you have. Always wanting more. Always demanding more. If you have 1 minute, you want 2 minutes, and you can't be happy with 1 minute. If you have 2 friends, you're not happy, you want to have 10 friends. If you have 20 outfits of clothes, you're not happy, you want to have 13. Anger and jealousy is very harmful. Jealousy and envy is very harmful, is because you are never, ever satisfied with what you have. And you never reflect on what you have, but you constantly live your life on what you do not have. So what you do not have, you complain, you show your anger, you show your dissatisfaction to yourself, to the people around you. What happens? People go away. People run away. And people avoid. So jealousy and envy is one of the greatest enemies of yourself, because that is what drives people actually away. You're never, ever happy. We will never be satisfied with what we have until we die. So to counter that, we have to reflect on the good things that we have. It may not be as much as the good things the next person has, correct. But you still must have good things in your life. And another way to counter that is to realize if you work this hard to achieve this, you have achieved it. So if the next person has this and you don't have it, instead of being jealous, you should rejoice that they have developed these qualities. They have developed and their time and their energy into this to achieve that, and to be happy for their sacrifice. When you sacrifice and you achieve something good and other people are jealous of you, your explanation is, but I worked for it. Yes. Similarly, other people have worked for it also. So people who are better than us, people who have achieved more than us, instead of all the time sitting among snakes that constantly bite us and that are venomous, the snake of jealousy and envy, we should transform it into lotuses that are harmless. By thinking that these people have collected the merits and the karma in previous lives to get these items, to achieve these items. And I rejoice, and I'm happy for them. Your mind becomes calm. Wrong view in erroneous philosophies. To hold your mind, they're like bandits because they steal things away. Bandits steal things, thieves steal things. Wrong view and erroneous philosophies steal what away? The correct practice from you. If you follow wrong views with a lot of pride and protect it, and you follow erroneous philosophies, philosophies without basis and grounding, that the results are not proven, and you cannot prove, and you follow it, it is like bandits because they steal things away. These wrong views and erroneous philosophy steal your time and your energy away, which could have been dedicated to something that can actually bring results. So it is kasa, equivalent to bandits. Captivity is greed and avarice. Similar to envy and jealousy. I won't go into jealousy. I won't go into much whatever. Fear of water and shipwrecks is lust and attachment. Attachment to items and to things and not being able to let go. That you expect things to be a certain way. You want things to be a certain way, and it doesn't come out the way you want. And therefore, you drown yourself in pity, self-pity. You drown yourself in sorrow. You drown yourself in unhappiness, and you want to give up. The sign of wanting to give up, the sign of self-pity, and the sign of always attached, always unhappy because of that, is a great sign of great attachment. That your mind is very, very attached to a certain way, to a certain thought, to a certain standard, and things must be done this way. And if it's not done this way, you are unhappy, you wallow in self-pity, you complain, and you want mercy. Constantly, it's like a shipwreck because in the middle of the ocean, instead of achieving its destination, the ship goes under. So what you could have been, what you can do, you don't do. The ship could have gotten to its destination, but it doesn't. It becomes shipwrecked. Why? Your attachment is very deep. To counter that is to realize that everything is impermanent. What comes up must come down. What is young must become old. What we get must be lost. What we receive must be given. Everything you have now, your children, your family, your parents, your clothes, your jewelry, your money, your position, your station, your knowledge, everything actually belongs to other people. Why? You can only have it for a few years. At the time of death, you must relinquish everything. And you may think, oh, I'll relinquish it to my kids and that. No, no guarantee. No guarantee your children will use it wisely. No guarantee it will create harmony among them and not disruption and fighting and arguments and disharmony. Nothing that you have, nothing that you own, nothing that you use, nothing is permanently yours. Until you realize that truth, until you realize that single truth that Buddha has taught, that nothing belongs to you and everything you have changes and must degenerate. If you don't accept that, then whatever you lose and don't have, you will constantly be attached when you want it again. And therefore you suffer. I don't have this, I don't have that, I don't have that, I don't have this, I don't have this, I don't have that. Because you don't want to see the truth. You don't want to accept what is reality. So when you don't accept what is reality, when you lose, you suffer. You will have to lose it. But there's a way of losing things. There's a way of giving things up. One that creates more negative karma, one that creates no negative karma. Everything you have and everything you use and you own belongs to other people. Even the great kings like Tutankhamun, where they buried their treasures in secret catacombs and secret underground, tightly trapped pyramids, are now completely open for the world to use, displayed all over. Even they cannot keep their wealth with protection, with catacombs. Great kings and queens have to lose their possessions. Who are we? Even when Buddha dies, he has to leave his stacked begging bowl and robes behind. Nothing can be kept. Therefore, when nothing can be kept, we use what we need and be happy with what we have. Whatever extra, use it for the benefit of others. Use it for the benefit of others. Then you will cut your attachment. Attachment is when you expect and want things to be a certain way, and it must be only that way, and you cannot get away from that. And you hold on to that, you suffer. And if you're silly, you make everybody around yourself suffer. If you don't have the karma and you don't have the support merit to have what you want happen the way you want, and you force it to be that way, you have not accepted the truth of impermanence. You will suffer. No one else. And in the process of suffering, you will do more and more actions to try to get it and create more and more and more and more negative karma. More and more and more. The karma just becomes bigger and bigger and bigger because you don't want to see what is true and accept what is true according to Lord Buddha. And what is the truth? The truth is all things must decay. What we get must be lost. What is young must become old. What is rich must become poor. Everything must be given up. Realize that, understand that, accept that, and then live your life and enjoy what you have. It will be a different perspective. Buddha cannot take your problems away. Jesus and God cannot take your problems away. If they could, they would have a long time ago. But giving you wisdom and a different perspective of looking at it through wisdom will take your problem away. In what way? You have the problem, you don't suffer with the problem. There's a difference of having a problem and suffering, and having a problem and not suffering. There's a very big difference. So us not wanting to see what is reality, we don't have the karma to get this, to achieve this, yet we force it. And then when we don't get it and we try to force it, we still cannot get it, we want it, we want it, we want it, and we complain and we complain and complain, and we do other bad things to try to get it, and do this and do that and this and this. And we go lower and lower and lower. Why? The karma pulls us down. Think about that. You are all educated and intelligent. And much more educated and much more better than I am. Much more experienced than I am. I'm from some weird little village in South India. You have much more education. Some of you are much more older and much more experienced than I am. Therefore, I don't teach this to you. I present this truth spoken by Lord Buddha to you. And you all check it out and see, is it true or not? If it is true, apply it. If it is not true, never mind. You don't go to hell. Buddha doesn't punish you. There's no guilt trips. See and check. That's what Buddha said. See, check, and see, check, see, and check. Correct or not. If it's applicable, apply it. It will definitely relieve a lot of sufferings and unhappiness. Accept that things have to go. Accept that things have to change. Accept that things have to degenerate. Accept that all things do not belong to you eventually. Temporarily, I own this watch and this mala. So if I'm very attached that everything must be my mind, I cannot give it up. If someone takes this, I will suffer. Maybe I commit suicide. But if I realize that things don't really belong to me, I just use it temporarily. I protect it while I can. If it's gone, that's all. then you suffer less. That is not to say you walk around saying, oh, nothing belongs to me, you just give everything away. No, but you have a middle way. Think about that. That is like the fear of being imprisoned or being accused wrongly, captivity.